This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Great New York Fire of 1776. Continuing a lost story of the American Revolution with Professor Benjamin L. Karp, Professor of History at Brooklyn College and the CUNY Graduate Center. New York City, between the 20th of September 1776 and the 21st of September in the morning of 1776, is burned by unknown cause. Accident or design becomes the debate, still not settled 250 years later. To look at a map of Lower Manhattan, which is what the urban environment then described 250 years ago, the burning from Whitehall Slip, where the ferry is, up the west side, through St. Paul's Church, all the way up past through St. Trinity Church, all the way up past St. Paul's, and the east side of the town at that point was saved by luck, by wind, or by the offices of the British soldiers, the Crown soldiers at the time. The Crown fleet was berthed mostly in the merchant district on the east side. We're now the next day, and there have been a number of people detained as accused arsonists. I go to one in particular who looks to describe the hectic events of the summer of 1776 in New York. His name, Richard Brown. Professor Karp reports him paroled after he was captured in the Battle of Long Island at the end of August, several weeks before. And he was captured on the 21st of September and immediately accused of being an arsonist and executed for setting fires. What led many people to be detained is that they were carrying what were called combustibles. What were those, Professor? Thank you.
I mean, combustibles could be a lot of things. It could be matches. And at the time, matches could be over a foot long, flammable materials kind of wrapped in rags, not like the small, you know, books of matches that we use nowadays. They could be wooden sticks with turpentine on the end of them. It could be, you know, gunpowder, lots of different materials that were used for normal civilian purposes or used for normal for military purposes, like, for fire ships and for ammunition and things like that. But yes, people were caught carrying incendiary materials. And this led British soldiers to believe that they might have had something to do with trying to burn New York City.
There was also combustibles found in houses that were either set aflame and then they solved the fire, or afterward, or they were seen during the course of the fire. You would find buckets of matches or gunpowder or turpentine. Now, one explanation is there had been an army stationed there, including artillery, and they had left all of that behind. Is that a credible explanation given the amount of reporting?
It's certainly possible that, you know, that the American Army was not able to remove all of its military equipment and stuff when they fled the city on September 15th. And a city would normally just have flammable stuff in it anyway, for its ordinary functioning. So there could be a perfectly innocent explanation for these incendiary materials lying around.
And there can be a pattern or there cannot be a pattern. Both sides have motives to find a pattern. There are significant voices, however, that are keen on saying that it was an accident and it was the wind. And one of those voices is the man commanding the now retreated Continental Army, George Washington. We've established that he had different opinions to him. The president of the Congress says, don't burn it. One of his major generals says, yes, do burn it. At this point, there are accusations immediately thrown against Washington. Does he respond quickly, or does it take some days?
He responds a couple of days later, and the letters that he sends out immediately after the fire are pretty terse. He writes to Continental Congress and says, we have no idea how this happened. And he writes to the governor of Connecticut, more or less saying the same thing with a few additional details, hinting at some of the atrocious murders that British soldiers had committed on the spot. But as far as Washington himself, he then says very little about it until a letter that he writes to his cousin about 6 weeks later that doesn't seem to have been widely known by historians until the 1940s.
there are many detained at the provost, which is the jail.
Mm-hmm.
And the provost marshal is said to be a rough guy, Cunningham, mm-hmm. I believe his name is. But yeah. And they were jammed into three cells and underground barracks, all crowded in together. But you emphasize that they didn't have proof on most of them, and they were clever to change clothes, so even identification was going to be difficult. Did the British turn to dealing with them right away, or was it several days before they asked questions? The reason this is important to me is because those were all eyewitnesses they were accusing of being arsonists.
Yeah, it seems like it took a few days. It's possible that they released some of them right away and held on to others. There's very little detail about this, except for some memories by a member of the British Judge Advocate General Corps who recalled that there was an inquest in the days following the fire.
And the testimony is scattered. Again and again, though, we run up against people saying there were combustibles everywhere. I saw people setting fires. However, there are no documents. To my reading, unless somebody wrote something in a footnote somewhere, I did it. There are no documents. We have a confession on the gallows more than a year later, but we don't have a document from that moment. Is that correct, Professor?
There's no one who wrote down, I did it. That's correct. I think it would be very unlikely to find such a document. I've written a previous book on the Boston Tea Party, and it took 50 years before people started coming forward and saying I was one of the people who helped to destroy the tea.
And yet there are accusations, and the accusations are almost tribal. The New Yorkers accuse the people from New England who are considered rebels. The people from New England, I believe they accused the British of setting the fire on purpose. Was there any witness of a British soldier or a British actor getting involved in setting fires?
I've found nothing credible to suggest that the British Army did it themselves. And I think even many of the Americans, some of them will later testify, like, that doesn't make any sense. The British were hoping to occupy the city. Why would they burn it down over their own heads unless it was, disobedient British rank and file soldiers?
I agree with that. I also know that they turned loose a great number of people they detained.
Yes.
Because General Howe, the Howe brothers had another mission, which was to defeat Washington's army. They turn all of this over to Robertson, commanding the city. He seems overwhelmed with the inquiries and delegates the inquiries afterwards. Did the British write down the testimony of the people they questioned immediately after the fire?
They might have, but if they did, the records were lost. And this guy from the Judge Advocate General Corps says this later, that this was a little bit irregular, actually. Normally, the records from this would have been turned over to his office, and then we would have been able to find them in the War Office records at the British National Archives. But instead, Howe seems to have kept the records in his personal papers, and the Howe's private papers were destroyed in Ireland in a fire in 1826. So if there were any records kept of this inquiry, we don't have them. And any records of prisoners that were kept in the provost were lost actually during the Revolutionary War at sea in 1780. So we're missing a lot of information that we might really need in order to get a sense of who was taken prisoner immediately after the fire, what questions were they asked, what results emerged from that inquiry.
And importantly, because all as children we're all taught, Nathan Hale, executed September 22nd, 1776. And when you visit City Hall Park, you can see the spot where he was hanged and left hanging there next to an effigy of George Washington. Nathan Hale did not participate in the firing of New York. However, you remark that there was reporting at the time or subsequently that believes the British revenged themselves on Nathan Hale and hanged a young man from Yale. Is that your opinion, Professor?
It may well be that Nathan Hale, who had been caught spying, was scapegoated for the fire and hanged for that reason as a kind of final hanging after the summary executions that had happened the night before. So historians seem to have concluded that he could not have participated in the burning of New York or the planning of the burning of New York. But because of the time coincidence, because he was hanged so shortly after the fire, he's often been associated with the fire. And there was a historian about 100 years ago, William Henry Shelton, who used to be a curator at the Morris Jumel Mansion in Washington Heights, who thought that Hale actually might have been guilty, and that he was the New England captain that is referred to in a bunch of British newspapers that the British had caught trying to set New York City on fire.
So there was accusation that Hale participated in the fire, but not proved.
Yeah, again, accusations by historians, but I haven't really seen much evidence at the time that Nathan Hale was executed for having burned New York City. He was executed for having been a spy.
Right, and admitting to it. We'll come back to that with Captain Patton. The book is The Great New York Fire of 1776, A Lost Story of the American Revolution. There is a war going on. When we come back, how has other work? But ask yourself, who benefited from the burning of New York? That's a question that will come again and again as we pursue the evidence. Professor Benjamin Karp, The Great New York Fire of 1776, A Lost Story of the American Revolution, Still Not Resolved. I'm John Batchelor.